Yes, yes. It's Big News Wednesday. Welcome back, one and all, to the biggest of news days. Big News Wednesdays with me, John Arilla, and J.R. Jackson. J.R., how's it going?
Oh, it's going. It's going. I revealed everyone at the back end of my show that as the day goes on, I'm getting increasingly more tired. I don't know what's wrong with me.
Well, it's still morning, so I'm a little bit worried about what's gonna happen later on. Thankfully, in about an hour and a half, you can go to sleep or something. You'll be fine. But the news will continue, and yeah, thus so must we. And of course, I'm gonna be joining Anna Kasparian on the Young Turks second hour later on today. But anyway, glad to have you here. I assume you're tired because I absorbed very secondhand from Twitter that sports stuff was happening yesterday. So I assume that's part of why you're tired.
Regular sports things, I mean basketball games and such, but the big stuff was over there. You know, Monday was the last big NFL playoff game though. But yesterday, I think I must have missed something if it's such a big sports day. I don't know.
It's something with a ball and there was a field. I don't know. I'm not sure. By the way, thank you to the people letting us know that the voice is out of sync. I'm sure that they are already hard at work on fixing it. But anyway, thank you everyone for being here. We got a lot that we're gonna be talking about. The shape of the committees is now coming together and it's shaped horrifically. So we're gonna be talking about that. Joe Biden, I don't know if he was trying to be cool or something in a little public appearance, but it did not work out. So we're gonna be criticizing him a little bit. We're going to take stock of Kyrsten Sinema. It's been a little bit since she left the Democratic Party. We're gonna see if that has helped or hurt her in her state and what might happen in the near future in Arizona. And then if you stick around for the full show in the aftermath, we've got updates on the Matt Schlapp lawsuit. He is alleged to have non-consensually groped a staffer. We have some big updates on that. And the fight to get human meat out of your food continues. We're gonna update you on what foods might or might not have human in them. So you're probably gonna wanna stay tuned on that. That's the most like local news tease we've ever done. Don't they always like make you scared that something you're eating is gonna kill you? There's bleach in one product in your kitchen. Stay tuned for the next 59 minutes and maybe we'll let you know. Anyway, lots to talk about. Oh, before we get to the news though, I did wanna mention, I believe the name Laith Kristen Merrow sent a very generous super chat in the very closing moments of yesterday's show. And so I didn't see it until I'd already closed out the show, but I didn't want them to think that we didn't see their message. So thank you so much, had said, and I especially love the content of the message. Laith had said, yay for Danielle being on. We had Danielle Moody on for the first time as a co-host yesterday. As a huge fan of Woke AF and Democracy-ish, and of course TDR and TYT both for years, this is such a thrill. Yes, Woke AF, Democracy-ish are two of the three podcasts that Danielle Moody hosts. We had a great show. I had been lucky enough to be on Woke AF a couple of months ago. So Leigh, thank you for your support and for shouting out Danielle, who did a hell of a job.
Absolutely.
Yes, that said, we're gonna jump into the news. Everyone who hasn't yet hit the like button, stop being dead weight and participate, okay? Be a part of the solution, everyone. And in return, I'll give you news. And if you want to send us any comments, tweets, or super chats, we will respond as we go. But J.R. Jackson, are you ready to start the show?
I think so. I'm back. I'm awake.
Okay, he looks awake. We're going to have him for a good 20, 30 minutes, then it's coasting from there. Okay, let's jump into this. It's a new year and a new you, and unfortunately also a new Republican majority in the House, which means they get to choose committee assignments, which means, oh dear God, what is happening out there? The House Republican Steering Committee, which makes these choices, has placed Lauren Boebert, Marjorie Greene, and Paul Gosar on the House Oversight Committee, which is, in the best of times, an important committee. And these are not the best of times. That's really the only committee where basically anything is gonna be done over the next couple of years. And the idea that you're putting these certifiable madmen and women on there does not bode particularly well. If you're not familiar with these figures, first of all, welcome to 2023, welcome to American politics. Here's why we're concerned. Marjorie Greene has, of course, pushed multiple conspiracy theories about everything, I think, at this point. Is not only going to be on the House Oversight Committee, is also gonna be on the Homeland Security Committee, which I think is almost too much. It's like they're jumping the shark, the writers. of American politics to put her on that for reasons we're gonna describe. Richie Torres, representative, said, as the former vice chair of the House Homeland Security Committee, I'm horrified that it was just announced that Marjorie Greene will serve on the committee. A QAnon conspiracy theorist and January 6th insurrectionist doesn't belong on a committee that exists to fight extremism. And now you can agree or disagree with Richie Torres. Obviously, he's on the other side of the aisle. I did think it was notable that in particular, some of the survivors of 9/11 have weighed in on this, including Sharon Primoli, who had been on the 80th floor when the planes hit the World Trade Center, said Mrs. Greene, a 9/11 denialist, knows nothing about 9/11 because she doesn't believe in legitimate investigative journalism or books, believing only the most outrageous conspiracy theories that deny the horror of what happened to 3,000 souls and to the injured survivors on 9/11. And I'm not gonna go through all of the crazy things that Marjorie Greene believes. We've done that in the past. But when it comes to 9/11, she has expressed the belief in videos that the entire thing is a hoax. In particular, she doesn't believe that a plane hit the Pentagon. And so the idea that she would be on the committee that was created in the wake of it and is supposed to safeguard the security of the homeland going forward, when she believes that all of that was made up, and as we'll get into, every other conceivable threat to our safety is also probably a hoax, seems a bit ridiculous. JR, what do you think?
Well, it's one of those things, once you've identified as this self-serving member of Congress, now you put on the Department of Homeland Security, at least as far as the committee overseeing this type of stuff, like who are you working for? Well, I know obviously that she's working for one particular group of people, but where's the trust in that happening? I mean, again, we expected it. McCarthy promised it months before they even won their slight majority in the House. So we knew it was going down, we just didn't know where it was going down. So then the thought then comes, well, why this one? Why not something smaller? We know that she backed him up for that speakership vote over and over and over, 15 times over again. But this is what she gets. I guess it has to be large enough for her to have that kind of, I guess, attempted influence on the whole thing. Maybe he specifically told her it's this one. What is it that she wants to do with it, though? Because, you know, each of these folks, each of these Congress people would be on specific committees, most likely the more powerful ones, because what they're looking for is power. But to do what? Guess we'll wait and see that part.
Yeah, no, I have no doubt that this is why she was such a big supporter of Kevin McCarthy. She asked to be on this committee, she was put on this committee. I mean, she probably also just generally wanted to be on committees again because she hadn't been since she basically since she became a representative, but she asked to do this, which is why, by the way, when she was saying, like, during the speaker battle of people like Lauren Boebert and Matt Gaetz, like, this is all self-serving, this is about them wanting things, she had already been given what she wanted. That's a quaint little position from which to attack other people who are just as ridiculous as you. So she got what she wanted. And why wouldn't she want to be on the oversight committee? The oversight committee is supposed to provide, you guessed it, oversight. Over the next couple of years, the sort of oversight that they will be providing is over, I don't know, whatever a random person says on 4chan about Hunter Biden, or God knows what will be next. And so you're gonna have a bunch of insane conspiratorial hearings that they are going to use to create sound bites. That's all that it's going to be, to raise their profile. They don't have any expectation that they're gonna take down the Biden presidency or put Hunter Biden in prison or anything like that. Dr. Fauci is gonna be, you know, sent to the gallows or something. They want you to believe that. That's not really what it's about. It's about demonstrating to the base that they're the kookiest one of the lot, that they believe the craziest things, and they will have a position from which to do that. And it's really a great gig for Greene, because she can show up to one of these things, say something insane with no basis. She doesn't have to do any work. It's not like she's gonna be meeting with constituents over the oversight committee or doing research to put together legislation or anything like this. This is exactly what she needs. It's all of the spotlight and none of the obligation to actually deliver for her constituents. And so it's also a big change for her, because as I alluded to, back in February of 2021, the House voted to strip her of all of her committee assignments, including on the Education Committee, which was always a hilarious place for her to be, because of her racist comments, advocating for violence against politicians, including Nancy Pelosi, and endorsing basically every conspiracy theory that has ever been thought of. By the way, 11 members of the GOP voted to strip her of those committee assignments. It was a big move. Like, you don't generally do that, but it felt like it was necessary for her. Now, because this is always the way American politics works. The GOP or an individual there does something so insane and dangerous and unprecedented that the norms are violated and there has to be some sort of consequences. And now that the consequences have been reached, the right will use that as justification to do that to whoever they want. And so Schiff or Swalwell or Ilhan Omar, they're gonna be stripped off their committees because now we're in the business of stripping people off of committees. I mean, never mind the fact that Marjorie Greene was liking comments saying that somebody should put a bullet in Nancy Pelosi's head. Let's forget about why she was stripped from her committees. Now it's just something that's done and we're gonna apply it to whoever we want. That's the sick system that we live in.
Yeah, we also find her, you know, there's other aspects. The list, I feel like, could go on and on. She showed up at Fuentes's white supremacist rally. She openly supported that. She's still talking about the stolen election. Has she disavowed Donald Trump yet? All these things are on her resume, if you would, about what she's been doing already in Congress. But also, look, there's those 11, you said those 11 Republicans that also voted for her to be off those committees. There's still some disapproving Republicans. They may not be all that vocal right now, but maybe there's some of them are on the Homeland Security Committee. Maybe some of them are gonna try and keep her in some kind of check from things that she may wanna do. Because again, it is a committee. So I'm trying to at least keep it in perspective for how much power and how much influence she can have, this one person. They may just go the normal crazy route that establishment Republicans like to push rather than the crazy MAGA ones.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, that's my bit of optimism, I guess.
It just like, and on Homeland Security, I mean, in theory, it's supposed to do some stuff. It's not gonna accomplish anything. Anything crazy that they do is gonna be vetoed or whatever. But like, she doesn't just believe that 9/11 was a hoax. And by the way, now she comes and says, no, it totally happened. I totally believe it. You can't judge me based on the things I said when I was young 3 years ago or whatever. She was a grown woman when she said those things. And by the way, again, not just 9/11. Did you know Sandy Hook, a hoax? Basically every mass shooting, a hoax. Mandalay Bay was a hoax, according to her. And she was so enthusiastic about these, she would film rants of her talking about how she doesn't believe in these things. COVID, also a hoax. Basically every threat to the homeland, she doesn't believe is real. So I'm sure she's gonna be a productive member of that committee. And it isn't just her. Paul Gosar, remember, he also lost his committee assignments in November of 2021. When he started posting anime portrayals of him murdering his colleagues. But again, it's all the same thing. I mean, he posted a video of him and Marjorie Greene chopping AOC's neck off, head off, and Ilhan Omar's a Muslim. So I guess it's all even, really. That is the approach that the Republican Party has. And again, like we said with Santos and McCarthy, where initially McCarthy is not responsible for the lies that Santos told. Although I would like to amend that a little bit, because now he's indicating that he had reason to believe that Santos was lying even before the election. So it's starting to look even more damning for him. But when he refuses to actually condemn Santos, it becomes his problem. We're now seeing the same thing when it comes to the conspiracy theories. Because it is one thing to just have members of your caucus that believe insane, dangerous things. But when you are rewarding them for that, giving them back the positions that have already been stripped from them, that's no longer just their issue. That's your issue now. Kevin McCarthy and the steering committee are giving the stamp of approval to people who believe that virtually every tragedy that has happened in American history was made up. And there's some ulterior explanation, probably involving Jewish people.
As usual, but also one more thing on Gosar, because look, the violence of that post that got him eliminated from that committee, you know, we've got happening in real life. So people may want to say, you guys are hyperventilating over him posting cartoons of murdering a colleague. Well, there's this guy, his name is Solomon Pena. Maybe you've heard of him, John. He's this guy who took that anime thought process and took it straight to his political enemies. Just like what we call the third world countries that have very messed up political systems. These things lead to real violence. Just because he posted it and he's like, oh, I'm just playing around, doesn't mean other folks don't take that to heart. People who want to be elected representatives, like Solomon Pena, not just some crazy person off the street in the middle of Nebraska. Yo, this guy was looking to do damage. And yes, children were involved in their homes getting shot at. Bro,
yeah.
They can brush it off as people just gonna forget about it. But the people who then carry out the stuff, they don't forget about it.
Yeah, I'm glad that you mentioned that. We're not doing a full update on it, but I did see that he was apparently dissatisfied with the violence that he paid for. He wanted the shootings to be more aggressive. And he apparently used an AR-15 when he participated in one. In any event, Boebert, Green, Gosar aren't the only ones who got committee assignments. George Santos, or whatever alias you prefer for George Santos, is also now on the Small Business and Science Committees. For some reason, why shouldn't he be on the Small Business Committee? He's worked for small businesses, he's owned small businesses, he's been a small business for all I know. Maybe he was an Orange Julius when he was younger. God only knows what he's going to claim now. Bear in mind, as if this is supposed to make it any better, neither of those two committees are seen as plum seats for lawmakers. Now, look, that again is supposed to make us feel a little bit better. Can we just stop though and say, isn't it a little bit messed up that the small business and science committees aren't considered important? Maybe they should be. Maybe being on the science committee should matter. The fact that it doesn't is not an indictment of George Santos, it's an indictment of our government. But anyway, he wanted to be on the House Financial Services and Foreign Affairs Committees, bearing in mind that his entire past on Wall Street was made up, and he is currently alleged to be fleeing an international crime that he committed. So I guess I understand why he'd want to be on those places. I don't think that he necessarily deserves it, although he did ask for it. And think about the balls on this guy. By the time we have a speaker and committee assignments can be made up, we already know about the million lies he's told about literally everything involving his mom dying on 9/11 and the Holocaust, and we're gonna get to more. And he's like, hey, I'd like the best committee spots ever.
They all do, don't they? And also,
just because I wanna be fair and I wanna provide balance, I'm being critical of him. There were some who greeted his new positions as a good thing. So former astronaut Scott Kelly tweeted, awesome to have former NASA astronaut and moonwalker George Santos on the House Science, Space and Technology Committee to infinity and beyond. I like that. Sorry, continue.
No, it's fine. I love that because some people need to point out how cartoonish this is, and I think that encapsulates it perfectly. So no, his qualifications on the Small Business Committee, he's run several, right, John? Run a few into scams, made sure he's stolen money from folks. I think he knows how small business works. I'm glad you pointed this thing out about it because, again, we're supposed to feel better because there's a small, not plum, what do they call it? A plum type of committee assignment. How much do politicians in general, it's not just conservatives, talk about how important it is to represent the small business leaders, small business owners in our country? They're the life's blood of our economy. They're the real people who provide jobs. We support them, things go forward. Why is this not a very important committee assignment? And if it is, which I guess they say so in political terms, why is George Anthony Santos Duvalder on it?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
It's really perfect. Care. I mean, they lie about caring about small business when they're really only interested in the largest corporations. So why not put the biggest liar in DC on the small business thing? And honestly, they love putting him on the science committee. It sends a signal to the Republican base that we think science is a joke. We don't care. We're putting a liar and a fraud on there. And they will eat that up. They will love that. Again, like we point out that it obviously reflects incredibly poorly on the Republican Party that they would allow a person like this to be a member in good standing, because we think it matters. But bear in mind, it's not like they are super worried about how this reflects on them. They don't want Americans to believe that any of this matters or any of it is deserving of any respect or consideration. They want everyone to approach the government as a complete joke so that they'll stop expecting things of it. Because they want everything to just be owning the libs and culture wars, and you'll forget about anything actually getting done. George Santos is an important step in the path to that future. Anyway, with that said, we do have more orange on George Santos. Shockingly, I know. Let's jump into this video.
How long did you actually live together?
We
We were only roommates for a few months. And I also knew him as Anthony Zabrowski.
So you knew him. Why did he say he had two names then?
Well, he used Zabrowski for his Friends of Pets United, his GoFundMe. And he would say, oh, well, you know, the Jews will give more if you're a Jew. And so that's the name he used for his GoFundMes.
Dear God, I try not to cover all of the new George Santos lies, but this one hits kind of home. Not the fact that he went with three different names. I'm going to fact check Anderson Cooper. He goes as Zabrowski, DeValder, and Santos, depending on the situation. Is he trying to fleece a religious group? Then maybe he'll change his name accordingly. And again, the idea that he would talk about Jewish Americans that way is just reprehensible. But that's not why we're covering this. It's about the charity that that individual referenced in the video. Because remember, he, in addition to being a titan of Wall Street, also wanted to help pets. The issue was that's not who he was actually helping. A US Navy veteran in New Jersey apparently seeking to save his beloved service dog from a life-threatening stomach tumor was connected with a man who called himself Anthony DeValder, who promised to raise the $3,000 required to pay for the animal's surgery. DeValder was, of course, actually George Santos, and he quickly disappeared from the veteran's life with all the money he'd raised for the dog. This is reporting done by Jacqueline Sweet for The Patch, by the way. So Richard Osthoff, 47-year-old veteran, told the New York outlet that Santos closed the GoFundMe in 2016 after they had fulfilled their fundraising goal and then some. So they raised more than the $3,000. George Santos stole it, robbing the dog of the medicine needed to take out the tumor, robbing the former veteran of any chance of the animal's life being saved. The dog, by the way, died. Okay, Sapphire did end up passing. And Osthoff, who had been out of work for over a year, turned to panhandling to afford the animal's euthanasia and cremation. Quote, one of the most degrading things I ever had to do. So George Santos robbed a veteran of crowdfunded money to save the life of a dog, and the veteran had to go beg on the streets to cremate the dog after it died. And that is among the sickest sequences of sentences I've ever needed to say on this show. And right now, he's going to get some new clothes to wear to the science committee, because everything worked out fine for him. Not for Sapphire and not for Richard Osthoff, but for DeValder or Zabrowski or Santos or whatever the hell his name is. Everything's working out great for him, JR.
I want you guys to think about how much this is for. I mean, maybe it was just over 3,000, but the goal there was 3,000 for this Sapphire, who was this guy's companion as he was alone, this veteran, thanks, good job, United States of America, out on the streets with the only thing he's got. And Anthony DeValder, George Santos, frauded him for $3,000. It does sound like a decent amount of money for folks who have to struggle so much, but this guy went through all this trouble for $3,000, who then went on podcast to brag about his self-made self and how he put himself through college. In colleges he never went to, but as long as he points that out, for $3,000. In New York, what does that get you, 1 month of rent in a box? Yeah, yep. That's what he did this for.
100%. Really fast, just because that is by far the worst lie. And oh, by the way, related to this, this is the person so far that they've identified that he robbed in this charity, but just wait. He had posted this. He's raising money for Zizi, another dog. And he posted this himself. He said at one point, for the most of you that know me, you know how serious I am with my work and the transparency it has. The idea, this guy continually projects. Anyway, that's not the only new lie. He lied about getting double knee replacements due to him being a star college volleyball player. He wasn't a star player. We have no verification that he's ever played volleyball in his life. He didn't go to those colleges. Did he even get the knee replacements? God only knows. He also said in August on the Steak for Breakfast podcast that he used to go to the Met Gala, but now they're discriminating against him based on his ethnicity, orientation, and political opinions. There is no evidence that he's ever been to the Met Gala. Tickets are $30,000 and it's invite only. Someone who was robbing vets for their dog's tumor money probably wasn't going to the Met Gala. And you reference this, JR. In a podcast back in 2020, he also said, I put myself through college and got an MBA from NYU and I have zero debt. I hate looking at youth today and seeing them sitting on their behinds. He didn't go there. He didn't get that degree, but he used it to attack young Americans who are burdened by student debt now. I think it's clear now. This is worse than the Herschel Walker stuff, right? I mean, Herschel Walker is more violent and everything in some of the incidents, but in terms of the lies, Herschel Walker did some of the stuff he said he did. George Santos cannot go one appearance without lying about something shocking.
And actually, Herschel Walker was a little uncomfortable once he was beginning to be exposed for all those lies. Santos does not crack even an inkling of being like, oh man, I think they got me. No, it's continued on. This double knee surgery. Come on, bro. Just some hardcore volleyball play you did there, kid.
Yeah. You know what? George, let's go on the court and I'm gonna set you and I wanna see you hit. I wanna see you hit a volleyball.
Just one time.
I wanna see what that looks like. Anyway, you know, or if you're not down for volleyball now, could we like box or something? Because after what you did to that dog, I would like to go a few rounds with you, honestly.
Yeah, no, I didn't even think about how much that's hitting you, John. Jesus.
Someone stealing dog's medical money. Anyway, he really is Trump-like, the way he despises dogs. Okay, we're gonna take our first break. When we come back, Joe Biden trying to look cool. It's not great. We'll be back after this. Okay, a reminder everyone, we're still giving out Blue Apron gift cards every day. So send in your comments, particularly good comments, maybe from a member, maybe get you a Blue Apron gift card. You never know. And with that, why don't we have a little bit of fun starting with this? So that is a White House ceremony honoring the Golden State Warriors who at long last after multiple years can come back to the White House without having to provide some sort of fake honor to Donald Trump. And you see there Joe Biden getting down on one knee before Kamala Harris refuses to bend the knee, saying, I'm not doing that. Now she's joking, she's laughing and all that. Also at some point during the ceremony, Biden mispronounced her name. I think he called her Kamala, but anyway, whatever it wasn't the way that her name should be pronounced. And I feel like, you know, you maybe give him a couple of months for his age before he figures it out, but she's been his VP for more than 2 years at this point. So I think he should probably have it by now. Anyway, what did you make of the taking of the knee, JR?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure what was discussed just before that. If it's like, you know, because as we know, the head coach there for the Warriors is very vocal about, you know, society issues and everything like that. So I'm not sure if he was giving a head nod to him because the, you know, they hadn't showed up because of the previous administration and the other two championships that they won. But I thought the best part was when he jumped back up and got in defensive position.
Yeah.
Steve Kerr, the coach. Next to him was Draymond Green, and next to him was Klay Thompson. They're all behind him. And they all three put a hand out like, oh no, he's gonna fall. They thought he was stumbling.
No, he was being Grandpa Joe. That's what he was being.
But they didn't see his face. So they thought he was teetering forward. And they were like, oh no, gotta catch him. And
it's the bicycle all over again.
I watched it so many times just to see how many people in the panic on their faces as they thought Joe Biden was going down yet again. And maybe we should laugh about it, but you know.
Sure.
Come on.
So I'm watching that and I'm thinking, you know, absent the performance or whatever, like he's being jokey and he's being fun. Trump could not have had that in a way that didn't end up being condescending or worrying in some way. When he jumps up or whatever, it's funny. I'm honestly shocked he was able to do that stuff. I mean, I'm not like, I don't take a knee without at least thinking a little bit about it at this point in my age, and he's double my age. The fact that he could jump up without both of his kneecaps crumbling. It's pretty impressive. Is that supposed to be? Was that him doing the political thing? Like, is that why he was doing it? Or because she said she's not going to do it. I wasn't sure if she was making like a joke about the politics of it, or the fact that they'll be criticized, or if she just literally physically didn't want to take the knee. I don't know, because we're so used to things like the Nancy Pelosi and the thing in the gallery where they take the knee and they wear the traditional garb, and like, I don't know what to trust out of these people. So I'm not even sure at what level we're supposed to analyze it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it could have been anything with her. I hadn't thought about it being potentially for any issues with knees. Because again, like you said, I'm 42, bro. And I worry every time I have to do anything that puts pressure on my knees. But then again, like George Santos, Anthony DeVolta, I played collegiate sports and I've got some knee issues. Haven't been replaced yet. Maybe it can raise $10,000 for me. But I think it was all lighthearted. Who knows the reasons behind it? But yo, it's the thing that I did want to point out, though. People that were supportive of it or laughed about it, or supporters of Biden, were like, yo, very impressive that he can do that. Oh, how impressive. I was like, yo, this type of praise doesn't sound that good. Like, man, I didn't know that our president could move. Oh my God, I didn't know he could stand up without falling on his face. That means you expect a lot less from him.
Yeah, definitely. So in practice, once you actually see, I don't mind it as much. I don't, as long as it's not, I don't like the lack of action coupled with the performative stuff sometimes. But the people in the room seemed to think it was funny. He was playing up for the crowd. He was awake, so that was good. That is good. I guess I'm fine with it.
The performative without the lack of action. You mean like his political action, how he's held up and not done certain things, but then he's willing to have this fun, good time and act like he's
If this is an example of that, and it's not 100% clear, but I never, as a general principle, I don't like that. That's what I'm saying. Why I go into this sort of thing a little bit critical, obviously.
John, you have to have fun as a politician. You have to meet and greet. You have to ingratiate yourself with people. What's the matter with you? You're running for office. You have to learn these things first.
Yeah, he's just doing like kip-ups. Where are the hamburgers? Come on, where is the McDonald's?
Yeah, what they ate.
Yeah, I probably better food than that. Probably Jack in the Box. Anyway, with that 10:36, you know what? I think we're gonna have to move on to the C block. Unfortunately, we had some other good video. There was a shout out about the Brittany Griner situation. It's on me. Anyway, so with that, you know what? Why don't we jump into the C block when we're ready?
Difference for the American people in the last 2 years.
And we still don't agree on getting rid of the filibuster.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Thanks, I hate it. It's just terrible. Like, first of all, Davos existing and the World Economic Forum, and then them being there, and then them teaming up in that way, Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin, like, hey, high five, we can stop anything from happening. Isn't it great, all of the things that we've stopped from happening? All of the like terrible threats that face us that we've done nothing against. I pointed out on yesterday's show that Kyrsten Sinema had, like many people of her type, posted messages about how much she loves the legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. and all that, when she is literally the white moderate that he wrote about, and in particular is using the exact tool that he warned against, which is the filibuster, to her then turn around and within 24 hours high five Joe Manchin over them maintaining the filibuster is just, well, it's not accidentally offensive. It is her purposefully spitting in our face. That is what she is doing. Because she's not in a room surrounded by people like us. She's not in a room surrounded by literally anyone from Arizona. She's in a room surrounded by literally the richest people in the world and those who work to advance their interests, even more so than in the federal government. This is like an international coming together of all of the people who are only interested in maintaining the economic dominance of the 1%. Even Chris Hayes, by the way, pointed out, I've heard from wealthy donors that Sinema is at her most comfortable and gregarious around rich donors, and you can really see it here. Yeah, you'll notice when kids go to protesters, she runs. When it's these people, she just feels so comfortable. She gets to put on her fancy clothes and high five a-holes. It's a great day, JR.
It's, there I am. It's one of those things where, look, you'll have Republican politicians that maybe aren't, I want to call it the fringe, but aren't with in lockstep with the majority of the things that their constituents are saying, or even the party line, and they're called mavericks and all that stuff. What you never see is those same politicians, then Nancy Mace being one of them. This only on this one specific topic. She's a lot more, you know, leaning towards the rest of the country when it comes to abortion rights, right? But you don't see her on stages high-fiving over it when it's brought up and saying, yeah, sticking it to them, those people that voted for me. You don't see that. For some reason, many Democratic politicians, once they find themselves in a little bit of a disagreement with some of their constituents, they find like this joy in sticking like their thumb in everyone's nose and be like, yeah, got you right. Why is that the approach? You're gonna high five over this? Yo, say it quietly, do what you wanna do. Have your stance that you're too afraid of Republicans for implementing something like this to get something done that they would not hesitate to implement if they were forced and needed to get something done that they really wanted to get done, that they promised their voters. So if you're willing to be that group of people, that duo of people, the fact that you want to exhibit just how much you relish in sticking your finger in everyone's face and be like, ha, got you. What's the purpose? What's the end game here? Who are you looking to please?
Those people in that room. And by the way, they were pleased. They're very, very pleased, very, very comfortable, very, very wealthy, very, very pleased about everything because they're winning. Let's turn to a slightly different aspect of this. It's been several weeks since Kyrsten Sinema announced that she was going to be leaving the Democratic Party, which she was such a helpful member of before. What effect has that had on her potential voters? Well, it really depends on how you identify. So amongst Democrats, according to Morning Consult, she had a 42% approval rating before the party switch, which is higher than other polls that I've seen. But don't worry, it fell. It's at 30% now, just a couple of weeks later. Her disapproval has shot up in just a couple of weeks from 41% to 59%. That is a massive change, but it has helped her out in a couple of different groups. So amongst Republicans, she went from 38% approval to 43%. Bear in mind, she's still underwater amongst Republicans, which she should be. She claims to be not a conservative, but whatever. It hasn't won those people totally over, although it has improved her position mildly, a smaller effect than it was for the Democrats. Where it does seem to have helped her is amongst self-identified independents, which I would like you to think critically always about what that term actually means. It doesn't necessarily mean what people would have you believe it means, but she went from 29% approval before the switch to 42% after, and her disapproval dropped from 50% to 43%. So she's still mildly underwater amongst that group as well. So it's helped her a little bit amongst the people who are disinclined to support her anyway. And it's hurt her amongst the people that she would have needed to win over in a primary, but now she won't need to. And so it leaves her in, I think, largely the same sort of position. I think that people just more so know exactly who she are, who she is, what she represents. I don't think that she can really hide that anymore. We're gonna have to see what effect it has if she tries to get reelected, JR, but I think that people are onto her game in all of these different groups.
Well, yeah, she saw it before she switched into the party affiliation. That was the whole idea. Now she's like, I'm free to say and do all these things that I was kind of already saying and doing in the first place, but just at least without the whole, I don't have to answer to you. I'm not a Democrat. You know, that's how this whole thing works. So this is one of those, I've said many times in many instances where we see congressmen and senators do things that are completely against what they said or what they're supposed to be doing. What other job can you step in, have some advancement based off of you not doing anything that the people who elected you or hired you to do? Then after doing it, just flaunt it in front of their faces. Which job allows that? And you can openly say, yeah, you know, I'm not doing any of that stuff. As a matter of fact, I'm gonna work against all those things that I previously preached for. And now I'll advance because of it. How does that work? It means they're not working for anyone who voted for them, working for the money.
100%. We have more about this. We're going to do a bit more of a look forward on tomorrow's show about what some of the more recent data says about how that primary might go down. So definitely tune into tomorrow's program. Bridget Todd will be joining us, and we're going to take a look forward to what that race might look like. For now, though, we are going to take a break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Okay, everybody, this is where it gets a little bit darker, a little bit more unfortunate, but that's the world we live in, so we're gonna cover it. Let's jump into this. An 18-year-old student, a student of Indiana University, was apparently targeted by a racist maniac and stabbed repeatedly while on a bus in Bloomington, specifically because that 18-year-old happened to be Asian. Student ended up with multiple stab wounds to her head, was transported to a hospital. And why don't we bring up this tweet? You'll be able to see the 56-year-old white woman who attacked this student has been charged with attempted murder, aggravated battery, and battery by means of a deadly weapon. So some of you might be playing devil's advocate in your mind and wondering, what did that student do to cause this? And I'm gonna be completely honest, based on everything that's available to us, literally nothing. I don't mean it not just anything direct. I mean nothing that can be interpreted as justifying any altercation whatsoever, let alone this attempted murder that we saw. She was apparently waiting for the doors of the bus to open, and the passenger began striking her in the head with a knife. Billy Davis is the 56-year-old, said specifically that she targeted the student for being Chinese, adding, quote, "It would be one less person to blow up our country." Apparently, there is video. There was no interaction between them before this attack. The beginning of their interaction was an attempted murder with a knife. And apparently, the student was stabbed at least 7 times before she got off the bus and this ended. And so, look, racist attacks and hate crimes like this are obviously nothing new in America. Violence perpetrated against Asian Americans or people who they believe are Asian Americans is definitely not new, but we're also not gonna pretend that it's not more common in the wake of the pandemic. And we're not gonna pretend that some of the most influential and powerful people, especially on the right, both in politics and political commentary, haven't led to people like Billy Davis, this 56-year-old, believing that Chinese people are suspect, Chinese people are trying to destroy America, China is the ultimate world villain, and something needs to be done about it. And so when these sorts of things happen, as they've increasingly been happening, we're not gonna pretend that it's just an isolated incident, because it very much isn't. Jared, what do you think?
Yeah, when you run out of bad guys and boogeymen, you keep expanding and expanding. So whenever the pandemic happened and you have an opportunity to open up your hateful people to then become more loyal to you based off of that hate, you take it and you run. We saw Donald Trump do that. And it's not just him. It's all stuff gets perpetuated. Do you think these pundits, do you think these politicians that are still in office are gonna talk about these types of things? We did a story earlier on the watch list about Sheila Jackson Lee was proposing a bill that would point out the terrorist nature of white supremacy. And if you're associated with promoting it and then leading to someone attacking someone based off it, you're up on these charges associated with it. I think it does have some things to tighten up on it to make sure you get the right people. But this is something that has people so upset. Specifically, it was Tucker Carlson. So if you're mad about how people then have to look over their shoulder like this woman had to do before getting on the bus, a normal daily activity, that is terrorism. She's been the attacker has been motivated by people who are looking for advancement within their careers, looking for more money, looking for more support, just lying about anything that they can to make sure they anger enough people that follow them and hang on every one of their words to then do things like this. And the result is someone just trying to get on the damn bus and get stabbed this many times. So if someone has to look over their shoulder just from doing normal daily activities, going to the grocery store, getting on the bus, driving down the street, going to school, going to work, all that stuff has to be monitored to make sure you don't get almost murdered. This is when leaders need to come forward and start talking about, listen, I had this to say, but I didn't mean that. They won't even say that because they don't want to lose that structure of regaining and exploiting more and more of their power. This is on full display, what people always talk about, how the evil of power and people's thirst for it just continues to grow. They just use foot soldiers like this to get there.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And look, there's a lot of responsible people who are gonna recognize what's going on. But while we can point out these links, we also, we would be stupid to believe that they will acknowledge it, that they will apologize for it. I mean, the idea that they're gonna apologize for demonizing China or Chinese people, they wouldn't apologize when the specific children's hospitals they were demonizing got bomb threats. Like, the link could not be clearer, and they still insisted that they had done nothing wrong. Okay, with that said, we're gonna move to our last topic for this first hour. We've been warning about how this anti-LGBTQ, specifically recently anti-trans fervor on the right, is going to turn violent. And I mean that in a continuing fashion. Obviously, it already has many, many times, attacks, murders, and those sorts of things. But I don't want people to forget about how much hatred and anger and xenophobia has been stoked on the right. And I want to show you this video. So Stephen Monticelli, I believe is the name, posted this video of a serial protester, an anti-LGBTQ protester, who just like dispensed with all the fake concerns over kids and everything, and just said what the ultimate objective is. So yeah, just to be clear, that's John Fornace, I believe, is the individual, a regular participant in these. His life now, as so many deranged Americans' lives, has become just being told by Tucker Carlson or libs of TikTok or whatever, this is the group that you hate now. Your entire life is hounding them on a daily basis. He stood in the middle of a group of other people, some his political opponents, some people who agree with him, and yelled into a bullhorn that I and others, we just want to kill all of you. And it doesn't look like the other people on his side had an issue with it. It doesn't look like they gasped. What are you talking about? No, it's something, something save the children, something, something drag, you know, the cover story. They seemed perfectly comfortable with him stating that all of this is really just pretext. This is prologue to what we want to do. Someday someone is going to tell us that it's time to start shooting and we're going to do it. We're mostly just hanging out until that point. And this guy felt perfectly comfortable to say that, knowing that he was being filmed. JR, what do you think?
It's weird how bigotry and hatred and threats to kill people is so easy to say out in public now with no fear of any kind of responsibility or consequences for it. I can say because my former president said it. He said that we can do whatever we want. These people are coming to get me. So the fear is increasing, but it always responds with fear that turns into this kind of anger and directed violence at folks. Now, if this guy gets attacked, if someone says, oh, really? And they attack him first, he's the biggest crybaby, biggest victim. Can't believe you guys did this to me. Look at how violent these people are. After you say things like that, it's always one of those things. They assume they're the only ones who are willing to do something after they actually say what they're going to do to this other person. Self-defense is suddenly not a thing for them. But as long as they're the ones attacking, they're the righteous ones with the weapons and the desires for blood. Yo, man, this is straight up terrorism. It's straight up terrorism. If guys can make videos holding hostages of folks that they don't like because of who they are and where they came from and all that, and we're afraid of it, and we're worried about we got to do something about this, why are we not afraid of this? What's different? What's different? Who the guy is saying it is the difference.
It's amazing that he would just say it so openly and not care. It's, by the way, it's not, if you go on the journalist Stephen Monticelli had other videos of the same individual making violent threats with cops around. Because again, they do not feel like the cops are going to do anything because they feel, and in many cases are right, the cops are on their side. Anyway, how much time do we have? Do we have a sec? Okay, just really fast, just to balance it out, because I can't leave that taste in your mouth. There are good people fighting against this. There are individuals like the guy that we showed you that are terrible. But then you also have high school students doing these major protests, laying out 180 black body bags in protest in Arizona against anti-LGBTQ legislation. This is Support Equality Schools Arizona. They're coming out against these bills that, for instance, prohibit trans girls from joining sports teams that fit their gender identity, that force teachers to hand over student records to parents, even if they contain sensitive personal information, and further ones that are intended to effectively just criminalize drag shows altogether in all contexts. There are young people, activists fighting against this, knowing that they might come up against the sort of person that we showed you in that first video, but they're doing important work. And so thank you to them, to Support Equality Schools Arizona. We appreciate the work you're doing. That is unfortunately all the time we have for the first hour of the show. Thank you everyone who's been listening and on the podcast, watching on the linear streams. There's much more to come on Twitch and YouTube in the aftermath. So don't go anywhere. JNR and I will be back after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.